Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
It's the moment you've all been waiting for. Certainly, I've been waiting for all evening. The South African Auditor General, Tsakani Maluleke, is in our company in the Kaya studio, and I'm so grateful that she was able to take the time to come here. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Rufile. Good evening to you and the listeners of Kaya FM. I am delighted to be here, and you know I can hardly say no to you.
I know. I'm so glad. So this evening's conversation is Pivot Point. We've just had a lovely conversation about ethics and Global Ethics Day and why it's so important, why accounting and the ethics in accounting is the bedrock, I suppose, of a properly functioning society and economy. But I do tend to find that Auditor General, not only in your seat, but even under the days of Kimi Makwetu, unless you're number crunchers like some of us, is sometimes a very thankless job and underappreciated. And yes, okay, we get the reports and then we move on. But we don't want to talk all night about that. I really want to talk about your career and Pivot Point and some of your motivations. But considering the fact that many smart people generally would like to get accolades, what inspired you to become Auditor General when you don't get the accolades enough and get blamed for, you know, we've got to file a report again?
You know, serving as Auditor General is a tremendous privilege because my job is, actually my job description is in the Constitution of the Republic. The work I do together with my team is so central to upholding democracy. Maybe it's easy to make light of it because we have it. Right. When we don't have it, you're not going to know what's happening with taxpayer funds. You're not going to regulate the behaviors and the choices of the people in whose custody you put public resources and public institutions. Remember that the people that we elect and then who are then appointed to lead particular portfolios, the people that are appointed to run departments or municipalities or state-owned entities, they do so on our behalf. They are there to do this work in a way that benefits society. Now, if you have no one that can tell you how they are doing it, you're going to have no sense of whether or not there is progress being made and benefits being derived out of your taxpayer funds in a way that does support democracy, supports economic growth, and that supports our development trajectory. So whilst we don't run institutions, we do play a central role in upholding key democratic principles.
Absolutely. And holding them to account.
Absolutely.
As you rightly say, it is my democratic right to vote. But really, I'm allowed to do so blindly. I can do so emotionally. I can do so for not many reasonable reasons. You introduce reason, fact, evidence into the equation in terms of holding us accountable and holding all of those institutions accountable. And so we appreciate it. Now, you do that, thank goodness, because we always talk about skills shortage in this country. You do that by being a chartered accountant in the first place. But you have a wealth of experience throughout your career. Please, again, what made you go to the T statements in high school? I was like, give me home ec. Anything but. What inspired you to be an accountant in the first place?
So it's actually a funny story. So you and I were raised by lawyers. Our fathers were friends and colleagues for a long time. And you and I, in many ways, tend to be daddy's girls. So I looked up to my father.
Just say that again in case my sister's listening. Just say that again. Daddy's girl favorites. Thanks. You're screaming at the radio over there.
I'm not going to enter that debate with your siblings. I'm very fond of them.
Fair enough.
And so I wanted to be a lawyer. My whole life, I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to be an attorney. I thought, in fact, I would end up as the Minister of Justice.
Wow.
A friend of mine from matric sent me what I wrote in our matric farewell book. And I said to them, guys, I'm going to be Minister of Justice. Wow. So call me. And now you run along to me going to university with the sole purpose of becoming a commercial lawyer. And I come across...
So the numbers were always there?
Well, the numbers were kind of there.
Yes.
So then I come across accountancy for the first time. So I didn't do T accounts at school because accounting wasn't my thing, right?
Yes.
So I come across the accountancy profession. At the end of the first year, I get a VAC job because one must work over the holidays. I look at the people there and I'm like, I can do this because in my simplistic mind, it's not that hard. But more importantly, the observation I make while I'm doing VAC work is that there are no black people around me. And so I ask critical questions about why I'm surrounded by people who don't look like me. Where are they? What is all this? And this was the year 1994. It was a very different country.
Yes.
And so, and I went to two different firms and same experience. And I asked the question of a few colleagues, why are there no black people around me? And they said, well, the problem is there are hardly any black people who are qualified CAs. I asked why. And then they said, well, we don't know. They just struggled to pass the board exam and qualify as chartered accountants. And I asked why again. And they said, we just don't know. So I thought, that's bizarre.
Yeah.
I'll do it. And so I dared to do it. I looked around. I read a little bit. I realized there were a few black men and women who had ventured into this area, but very few at the time. And I was like, well, I can do it. And I was also maybe inspired by my dad and your dad who worked hard to transform the legal profession.
Correct.
And so all of those things about inclusivity, about equality, about representation in key sectors that serve society, those principles I think were already in my makeup,
yes,
in my thinking, and those radical ideas about how one can drive change by making different choices, and also just a sense like, I can do this.
How dare
so
you.
I did.
Yes. I love it. I'm so glad you did too. And here you are, the first woman in over 100 years, the first woman Auditor General of South Africa, and by virtue of that, the first black woman Auditor General. And I must thank you. I must say, in high school, when our guidance counselors were talking to us, they were like, girls, you can consider chartered accounting, especially they're looking for black girls. Like, not a chance. Somebody else is going to have to take up that one. So thank you for doing that for us. Okay, so tell us a little bit more now. So then, so you break into this, but you still got justice at the heart of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the law hasn't left you in that regard. Mm-hmm. You're still a very big part of the law, the legislative fraternity, even if you are in the executive. And I watched, which I don't often do, but I watched the full, I think it was almost 3 hours of your presentation to COGTA, slaying in that outfit, but also delivering a very firm message, but with such care, respect for the institutions that you were sitting in front of, because you wouldn't have been blamed if you wanted to almost scold the municipalities for you're messing it up for the rest of us. And I found that you were compassionate and extraordinarily fair throughout, and balanced. Well, you've always had a cool temperament about you. You're not wild like the rest of us, like me and your little sister. And I just wanted to ask, you know, what was the most difficult part of that day, and of holding your peers to account in this way, where it's, come on, guys, you know what the job is, you know what the right thing to do is.
Perhaps the most difficult part is finding the most inspirational way to motivate people to do the right thing. Knowing that the right thing is known and is something we've said many, many times before, but to tell a compelling story of what happens when we do the right thing and what happens when we don't do the right thing, and to keep finding examples of both sides of the spectrum. And the reason it's important for me and the people I work with to do that is that it's no good depressing people only.
Yes.
You've got to, yes, be courageous enough to tell it like it is, but also leave something on the table so that the people you expect to act are motivated to do so and they're informed about what to do. I also have some sympathy for a number of very good civil servants that try hard. You know, in our work, we come across many of them. There are a lot of them who show up every day and they try hard against the most difficult odds. They don't have the facilities to do what they're supposed to do. They operate in environments that are not characterized by professionalism. They're also physically uncomfortable because, you know, municipal offices tend to be neglected.
Yeah.
And they're not sexy and they tend to be neglected, right? And so I have a tremendous compassion for them. The running a municipality is complex as well, and we underestimate it. And so what I worry about too often is that too often we don't spend enough time, and we being the entire system, not just my office, we don't spend enough time ensuring that people understand what they're supposed to do. We've neglected that part. And that's whether they are in the management or in council. There are many politicians that are elected and appointed to take on significant roles with major authority and with huge influence on the tone, the culture, the compliance, and indeed the performance of these institutions, but they're not equipped to do that work. So even with their best of intentions, they just don't do it. So yes, there are a number of rogues, but in the main, we come across many people who do try.
That's so encouraging to hear. And if I can just emphasize again to your point about motivating, I found you extraordinarily empowering to the municipal people and the COGTA representation in front of you. Yeah, you kept on reminding them it's in your hands for it to turn out well. And I was like, she's so nice. I would... I'm not the Auditor General for a reason. If you're just joining us, the voice you just heard is that of Tsakani Maluleke, South Africa's Auditor General, the lady who keeps all of our departments financially honest, actually. You normally, if you listen to radio enough, you will normally hear her name around the time of year when she says 87% of municipalities have gotten a qualified audit and the like. But actually, as you can hear, there's so much more to this role than that. What would you ask of our listeners and of South Africans as a whole in understanding that compassion that you have? Because as you're saying it, the thing that's coming to my mind is here is a set of departments, municipalities and the like, and various departments that has a very demanding customer that almost never says what it wants, but always says what it doesn't want. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I could walk through a township and be like, there are no trees. You know, mm-hmm. I would really like to see more trees. So I don't think as South Africans, I don't think we're that involved in the democratic process to go to council meetings to say, we would love trees on our street. But sure, should the sun come out, you'll hear from us. You know what I mean? So what would you ask of us?
I would ask you to remember that you have agency. So when you vote with a sense of responsibility. Yes, still make your choice, but do so from an informed and responsible posture. Once you've made the vote, don't look away. You don't get to abdicate your responsibility as a citizen. The reality is that this is your country. These are institutions that are set up to serve you. You don't get to sit and demand service delivery. And when it happens, great, but when it doesn't, you want to protest. You don't get to do that. You've got to remain engaged. Unfortunately, we don't do enough education about the governance arrangements of our constitutional democracy. And as a result, far too many of us who should know better tend to not know better. And so we look away and then we want to join the parties that complain. So you have agency. Yes. Stay with it. Maybe the second thing I want to offer. Don't do things that are going to take away the very capability that must plant and maintain those trees you like.
Right.
And we do that sometimes as clever professionals, clever business people, by feasting on public institutions that are weak.
Yes.
And we further weaken them. And no, I'm not trying to suggest that people aren't entitled to pursue self-interest and make money and optimize returns. Please don't get me wrong. I am saying that we've got to moderate the choices we make with a sense of responsibility as citizens. Mm. You know, one of the key headlines you hear us raise as an office is about the use of consultants, and particularly the use of consultants in the preparation of financial statements. But I guess the same could be said for consultants who help with infrastructure projects,
correct,
the consultants who do things in HR or other services. We just focus on this because it's so directly linked to the work we do. We find that professional accountants who belong to the same professional bodies we do, are trained just as we do, we are have subscribed to the same ethics principles that you and Portia were talking about, then engage in behavior that's completely inconsistent with that. Why do I say this? If you get a call from your municipal manager or a mayor on the 1st of July, because year end was the 30th of June, who says to you, come and help me prepare financial statements because I must submit them to the AG on the 31st of August. And you arrive there, they don't even have the basics that you would need to prepare financial statements. The records simply aren't there. Why do you take on that job? Right. Why are you allowing yourself to be a pawn in a story that says, well, kind of prepare financial statements, make them look right, and then fight with the AG, even if you get a disclaimer? And then you get someone who walks away with 5, 10, 35 million rand for a job like that. We get there, we try and audit, and there's still these things don't make sense. And your job now is to fight with us. So we sit back and we say, but these professional colleagues of ours are trained like us. Why would they behave like that? Because our code of ethics say, beyond serving that individual client, your job as an accountant is to actually serve society.
Right.
To serve in the public interest. So how is this in the public interest? So when you see these numbers we keep raising about the amount of money that's being spent by municipalities purely to prepare financial statements, the number recently was 1.3 billion rand.
Maybe if not the youngest. With respect. But I'm saying, yeah, I think you are pretty much amongst the youngest in terms of these key positions, the big ones, the big ones. I guess I'm asking, you know, the motivation to enter the public service and how we motivate more of those consultants, not to be consulting too, but to be a municipal financial director within, for example. How do we shift that? And I'm also asking you this as a big sister, because I'm asking, why am I outside public service if I wanted to change so much?
Yeah, so look, I think you can stay outside of the public service and still make better choices, as the example I've
You're
given.
Right.
Entrepreneurs have a responsibility to act with integrity when they operate with the public sector. Within the public sector, I'm motivated by the idea that at the office of the AG, I work with professionals.
Yes.
I work with passionate people who want to deliver good quality work and also serve in the public interest, who really care about this country. The patriots I get to work with inspire me every day, right? And so here's the thing. The environment within the office of the AG is very professional. And the same would be true for a number of other public institutions where you do see a concentration of these young lions that you're speaking of, who build fantastic careers in those institutions and then move on to build even more stellar careers elsewhere. And that's what you want. So what we've got to do is get a critical mass of young lions in different places. And importantly, we've got to get the politics right so that more and more public institutions are characterized by professionalism. So that's one of the reasons why at the Office of the AG, as part of our key messages, is the need to professionalize the public sector. All of it.
Agreed.
You've got to make it attractive for young talent and even more mature talent to make it their business to go and serve there. To find it attractive to wake up every day and go do their work, because it's surrounded by professionals that operate in a professional environment where performance is rewarded, where bad behavior is sanctioned, where there's ongoing personal development. Collectively, everybody's growing, right? And a commitment to service excellence. And that's what we have at the Office of the AG. And that's why I enjoy the work I do.
I love that. Okay, so, all right, I'm not going to do accounting, but now I want to work at the AG's office. I'm just not. Do you need any economic models or anything like that? Okay, so what's exciting about that is that you're absolutely right. There are a number of these institutions that do look like that. Perhaps this, what I did want to say is this reminds me of what Portia's study was highlighting, is that leadership and culture make up the big question for people with respect to ethics, and I suppose for the enjoyment of professional spaces.
Absolutely. And maybe one other thing we can all do is to celebrate those institutions that demonstrate that. And there are a few. I mean, you talk about the Reserve Bank in memory of the late Tito Mboweni. That's one of the institutions that's stellar, and it's recognized amongst its peers, right? 100%. On the continent and globally.
Yes.
And we must celebrate that the National Treasury similarly, and a few others. The DBSA.
Yeah, they
do fantastic work, and they're well run with a stable board, with a professional team that gets the job done.
Absolutely.
And that's what we got to get more and more of institutions like that.
Absolutely. And I'm certain that we will. Let's step away from now and let's go back into the past. Over your career as an auditor general or as an accountant, chartered accountant, was there ever a moment in your career that made you think twice about your choice?
Yeah, so one that comes to mind is at a time when I was trying hard to think about what next for my career. I stumbled into an institution. I was there for a very short time, and one of the things that troubled me about that place was a sense that there was a mismatch values-wise.
Okay.
And fortunately, it happened early, and I was able to then make different choices.
Yes.
What helped me make those choices for me was a very deep sense of who I am. I'm motivated by a few things. Service. I'm motivated by professionalism. And I also got to think about what would my parents think of me and what would my children think of me, right? I'm motivated by things that ring true in terms of a contribution into society. It's just one of those things that has been meaningful for me.
Yes.
And so I guess I was looking for that, and when I didn't find that and instead I found something different, I was clear that that's not for me. I was able to make that choice because I'm backed by a professional qualification that opens doors for me. I'm backed by a track record that's decent and a reputation that's decent. And I wasn't shy to start again.
Yeah. That's powerful. So that was a big pivot in one respect. And then can you think of, for example, a lodestar or a champion? I mean, how important are champions to you or sponsors? I like the idea champion because it's sometimes I think generationally, and then with all due respect to anybody who's ever asked me, but when a person sort of comes up and says, can you be my mentor? It's, why and on what basis? And sometimes I think they see shiny and they assume. But when it's a champion, often that's a person who's identified somebody and is just singing their praises when they're not in the room.
Yeah. And I think that's the critical thing. You need more people who are going to sing your praises when you're not in the room.
Yeah.
And I guess I've been fortunate in that many of those, I don't even know they were doing this. You know, you kind of realize it much later. You realize it much later that, oh, so this is what this was about. But I think it's because I've never gone out to seek mentors. I've kind of formed personal relationships, personal connections with people, and journey with them over time. And some very close and others not so close. But people kind of get to know you and they know what you're about. And they do bat for you in places that you don't even know.
Okay, so that is actually still very important. If you're just joining us, the voice that you're hearing is that of the Auditor General of South Africa, Tsakani Maluleke. It is, I have 5 minutes left with the most erudite and incomparable Tsakani Maluleke, our Auditor General of South Africa. This is Pivot Point, the opportunity for us to get behind the throne, behind the crown of a key business individual within the South African economic sphere. The word is escaping me and I don't know why. Sorry, not as erudite as she. Taki, we haven't spoken a great deal. You did mention a little bit earlier that some of the things that motivate you include what your children would think of you, what your parents would think of you. How does family play a role in terms of your daily inspiration?
I was fortunate that my role models, my sources of inspiration, my greatest competitors and yet cheerleaders, I can find in my family. So whether it's my father or my mother, who inspire, whose choices, whose work, whose track record, whose teachings inform so much of who I am. I'm fortunate that I have siblings that are my friends. I hang out with them. We love each other. We have fun. I have two sisters who are my greatest cheerleaders, but also my greatest competitors. You know them.
Yeah. equally brilliant and successful, and I can only imagine.
And I have two daughters who I think give me yet another softer side to be able to give expression to who I am. And that's my story. So a lot of my time off is spent around that, right?
That's lovely.
And then I've got a circle of friends that then, you know, top up what else I need. So I am fortunate that so much of what I need, as I say, I've been able to find in my siblings and my family and my children. Yeah,
so incredible professionals and professional women in your family. As I mentioned earlier, you're the first woman AG in South Africa. The last time we saw each other, we were speaking at a Women's Day event at UCT Graduate School. And what do you think about how things look now for women in the profession? I mean, do you think that a student graduating now might also walk in and be like, hey, well, I'm not seeing people like me, like you felt when you got to varsity, or have we sort of broken that ceiling a bit?
Not a chance. So the profession has transformed significantly. The representation is quite encouraging. There is none of the big four firms that is untransformed. They right. all have black CEOs, if I recall. PwC even has a black female CEO, mm-hmm. right? We have the SAICA being led by a black female CEO, right. the Institute. And by the way, she's AGSA trained.
Right.
Yes, she's an AGSA alumni. The office of the AG is one of the biggest contributors to the numbers of new chartered accountants that qualify every year.
That's right.
We stand alongside the big four firms, the big four international firms. So
Absolutely.
We'll come either number two, number three, number four in terms of the number of new CAs that come through our office, and that's quite important. And because remember, they write the same exams, they have to meet the same criteria to qualify. And many of ours, so if we qualify 309 as we did 2 years ago, most of them are black, about 80-90%.
Okay.
And most of those are female.
Women. Wow.
When I look at the teams at the office of the AG, they're predominantly black, and most of them, and African, and female. In fact, I sometimes have to remind my colleagues that, you know, it's okay to hire guys, you know. But I guess I'm saying this to highlight that the profession is very different from what it was in 1994, and we have to be very proud of that.
Yes.
There's been significant effort by many players in a concerted effort. We've been very fortunate in the profession. We've had leaders who were able to build the profession outside of their narrow individual business interests.
Right.
And I so wish other professions could learn from us.
I do too. Okay, I have a minute left with you. So we're going to do wordplay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Two words I'm going to give to you, and you just give me the first thing that comes to mind. Watch sport or play sport?
Watch.
Springboks or Proteas?
Springboks.
Nah. Mm. Okay. Asia or Africa?
Africa.
Business or economics?
Business.
No, man.
Sorry.
Netflix or Showmax?
Netflix.
Ah, the South African content, girl. No.
Netflix has lots of...
No, it does actually. Yes,
content.
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you, Burnt Onion Productions. And breakfast or dessert?
Breakfast.
Nah. A woman after my own heart. Zaki Maluleke, thank you so much for joining us. The Auditor General of South Africa. We're so grateful to have you. I would say you were the most experienced of all the Auditor Generals, right? Because you were deputy for a very long time with Kimi Makete.
Well, he was also deputy to Terrence.
That's right.
But I came in even before deputy. I was I reported to deputy for 2 years, then became deputy then. So by the time I finished, it would have been 15 years in the office.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.